terror attack in one of the most famous tourist spots in the world. Gunshots ringing out on the Champs-Élysées, usually packed with people. Of course, many of them tourists from all over the world and the United States. It is now a crime scene tonight. The shooter targeting police officers, killing one of them, wounding another, before that shooter tried to run from authorities down the Champs-Élysées. He was taken down. There are new pictures coming in tonight, and ISIS now saying they're behind it.
What we found are that there are two documents drafted by an in-house policy shop for the Kremlin that reports back to President Vladimir Putin. This organization called the Russian Institute for Strategic Studies drafted two reports last year, one in June and one in October. The first in June talked about how to influence the U.S. electorate and persuade the U.S. public to choose a new U.S. administration that would promote policies beneficial to both Russia and the United States.
Instead of reacting in a short-term level, are reacting with a long-term 10-year housing strategy that's going to build more rental units, going to build more affordable housing. The federal government's investing over $11 billion. My focus is on making sure that for the medium and long term, people in Toronto and across the country can afford their homes.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Today is Friday. It's April 21st, 2017, 5:11 in the morning. Glad to have you along for another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day. It is Friday, TGIF. Glad you're here. Paul Nolte is here as well. We'll bring him in a moment. Later on, Rick Cini, maybe some cheap airfare. We'll also talk about how United's been handling its problems and see if that's improved a little after the airline reported earnings and passenger numbers this week, all coming up on The Opening Bell here this morning. But first, let's check out the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning. Numbers, futures are flat to positive, with the Dow futures now up about 4, S&P futures up about 3, NASDAQ futures up about 11. World markets, Asia generally lower, with only the Shanghai looks to be, or the Nikkei looks to be a little bit positive this morning, Hang Seng, Shanghai. Everything else is negative. In Europe, all of the arrows are pointing down as well, with the exception of the DAX in Germany. And oil this morning looks like $50.26 a barrel, off about a third. Numbers refreshing here. We'll keep you posted on Market Desk numbers as we move through the morning. The dollar declined against the yen, was steady against the euro. Some other news that we've been following for you overnight. World finance leaders are being confronted by a growing backlash against globalization. They're hoping to build support for free trade by finding ways to help those left behind. They'll continue their efforts this weekend. Global finance leaders representing the 189 countries that are members of the IMF and its sister lending organization, the World Bank, gathering in Washington, D.C. to begin their annual meetings. President Trump continuing to target a law meant to stop banks from growing too big to fail. The president will travel to the Treasury Department today to sign three measures. One memo will order the Treasury Secretary to review a component of the 2010 Dodd-Frank financial reform law that allows federal regulators to liquidate large financial firms during a financial crisis as an alternative to bankruptcy. Yesterday, a very positive day on Wall Street. The Dow up almost 200 points. Let's bring in Paul Nolte of Kingsview Asset Manager, Senior Portfolio Manager there. Paul, good morning. Happy Friday.
Good morning. Nice to be with you this
morning. Good to have you back. So what happened yesterday on Wall Street? A little bit of recovery.
A little bit of recovery. We got some very good earnings numbers from a couple companies, but we also got comments from the Treasury Secretary about fixing the tax laws, and that they are not tied to fixing Obamacare, which everybody kind of thought one had to follow the other. Mm-hmm. And they feel very confident that they're going to get some tax measures, tax relief passed this year. And I think Wall Street had kind of written that off. So that was very good news.
Yeah, it was a week, though, that was sort of contradictory on those. He said earlier in the week it wouldn't happen until later this year, maybe even August, but yesterday sooner than later, he said.
Well, yeah, I think they're still targeting August. I mean, you know, they've got Congress is on recess for, I think, another week yet, and then they come back. Their summer recess starts late July, early August, so they've got a month, 2 months to get things done. And things don't happen very fast when you're talking about Congress, so I think that's still a pretty aggressive schedule. It was aggressive when they first announced it. December, January, and it's even more so now.
What would you say is the biggest story of the week where we're concerned here at the business desk?
You know, it's we're getting into earnings season. This is this week, next week, and even the week after are the big parts of the earnings season. And it's kind of a mixed bag. You know, the financials generally did okay, but a lot of the money earned from the banks was on trading activity, not necessarily loan activity. We're seeing some good numbers from some selected companies. Top line growth is still kind of anemic, so we're not selling more stuff, but through financial engineering and cost cutting, et cetera, earnings per share still looks pretty good.
Goldman Sachs was the one I think that everybody was watching this week. They came in a little bit more disappointing than everybody thought.
Yeah, they were the one standout in the banks, and Goldman is certainly not a traditional bank. They make all of their money on trading, and they came in much lighter than expected on the trading activity, where J.P. Morgan did well, Morgan Stanley, et cetera. So they just missed out at this quarter, and I'm certain they will be redoubling their efforts this quarter as well.
And we're going to start seeing more of the regular companies added to the mix of earnings. I know IBM was on your radar screen.
IBM was, again, disappointing. This is their 20th consecutive quarter of lower revenue. They're shifting their business to the cloud and trying to get Watson out there a little bit. And they've been in a very long transition from the hardware side to the software and the cloud side. GE is this morning. We'll see more of the technology companies over the next week and a half. So Apple, Google, et cetera, those are going to be some very interesting companies to keep an eye on.
Now, does IBM, is their main competitor in the cloud, Amazon? Would they be those two?
The two big competitors there are Amazon and Microsoft. Yeah. Microsoft has done a very good job in shifting toward the cloud, and they have been very successful there. So they're a very good competitor to Amazon. Amazon is a big one in the cloud as well.
Yeah, you mentioned Watson there. I know Amazon announced earlier this week that they were adding more artificial intelligence to their clouds for people who buy space on the cloud and rent space on the cloud. Now can use that artificial intelligence. Is that where IBM may be slipping a little bit? Or,
you know, it's hard to say. I don't get involved into the nuts and bolts that much. And again, for a lot of companies, Amazon, it's a piece of the business. It's becoming a bigger piece for IBM as well as Microsoft. So when you look at some of these parts of the business, I'm interested in A, B, or C, you have to look at those companies where that's really a big part of their overall revenue to capture that from an earnings perspective and a growth perspective. If it's just kind of a bolt-on 5% of an overall company, you're not going to get that benefit from a earnings per share basis.
You know, the robots are our friends, Paul.
They are.
We don't want to talk bad about the robots or artificial intelligence.
They're watching.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now, stocks climbed yesterday as corporate results left investors feeling better about the economy. The S&P 500 advanced 18 points to 2355. The Dow Jones Industrial Average rose 174 points, closing at 20,578. The NASDAQ Composite gained 54. The Labor Department says more people sought unemployment benefits last week, but that total applications remained at historically low levels. Analysts say the data suggests that the job market is healthy, even as the economy is growing at a sluggish rate. Tesla is recalling 53,000 Model S sedans and Model X SUVs because of a problem with the parking brakes. The company says there have been no accidents or injuries caused by that issue. As part of his Buy American, Hire American initiative, President Trump has launched a wide-ranging look at whether to curb steel imports in the name of national security. The president yesterday raised the possibility of new tariffs on steel imported from China and other countries. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program 523. This weekend in France is the big election. It's the first of the big presidential elections. Paul Nolte is here with us on Fridays. He is every week from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. Paul, we're all going to be watching the election because we know one of the candidates at least wants France out of the European Union. A Frexit. So talk to us a little bit about that. If it comes to fruition, would that be the end of the European Union?
If it goes through, and that's a big if it goes through where France decides to pull out, I think that would be certainly one of the issues that they're going to have continuing on, because France, along with Germany, are the two main players in the European Union. So I think that would be damaging. But what's interesting listening to the candidates over the last week or so is all of them have kind of shifted toward the center, I think in an effort to be a little bit more appealing to the population to get the votes that they want. And what they do when they get elected is something else again. But we're hearing a little bit more rhetoric that's a little bit more mainstream now than it was, say, 3-4 months ago.
I don't know about you, but it's I look now at polls and predictions with a very wary eye. You just never know what's going to happen.
No, and again, that's we've been down this road before with Brexit, with Trump, right. You know, and all of these different events. It's had an impact on the markets, but that impact has been diminished each time that we've gone through this. So I would not expect to see much of a market reaction to the elections as much as we've seen historically with the different candidates and issues.
We were talking a little bit, too, before the break about some of the economic data, earnings and stuff that's out there. Economic data is still, we're still seeing after the jobs, first jobs report, the April jobs report, wages seems to be stagnant still, not going up as high as they should. Retail sales are down. What's happening with these areas of the economy?
You know, it's very interesting. We're seeing the wages are growing at about 2.5% or so, and they've picked up a little bit, but inflation is growing at about 2%. So wage net of inflation is flat. Consumers are very optimistic. They feel very good about the economy and where we're going, but it hasn't translated to retail sales. It has, and the fact that the job market is as tight as it has been, and certainly we're hearing that from the Beige Book and other reports, we would expect to see wages go up a lot more. You know, again, they're having a hard time filling jobs. Well, one way to do it is increase the wage that I'm paying for that job to attract people in. We're not seeing that. So, and that's the difference between that soft data of the surveys and how you're feeling versus the hard data, the inflation, the retail sales, industrial production, et cetera. They're not quite matching up. We would expect them to get together, but so far that hasn't been the case. So economic growth, and we're going to get the GDP report next week, probably less than 1% for the first quarter, which is, again, historically in line with what we've seen for the first quarter in the U.S.
I saw a report yesterday, a little just anecdotal. It wasn't an official government report. I think it was a survey that said some tech companies are starting to up their starting salaries because they're having a hard time attracting folks. Is that sort of an indicator of things possibly to come?
It is, and that's what we would expect to see. It's things that we would want to see. If the job market is really that tight and it's really hard for me to get somebody in the front door to fill the position that I have, and I want to be increasing that offer and try to get somebody in. If I can't get them in at $60,000, maybe I need to offer $70,000 or $80,000 in order to attract somebody to come in.
You mentioned the Beige Book, the Fed folks out talking again. What are you hearing from them about? I mean, we talk about this every week, it seems, is the rate.
Yeah, that's it. They have not moved really from their discussion of two rate hikes, and maybe start talking about reducing their balance sheet. They're still very much on board with this is what we're going to do, and it seems to me as though the economic data we're not paying attention to because it has been softer. It's come in much worse than expected over the last 2-3 weeks or so. But they're sticking to script and are pushing for that rate hike. So June would be the most logical next time to raise interest rates. Again, the expectations have been coming down from Wall Street that they're actually going to do it.
Some numbers that we really didn't like to see last night, the Blackhawks.
Oh, that was very
disappointing. It's
going to disappoint
you, right? So what do you have going on for this weekend? Anything good?
We're going to be enjoying the warmer weather and playing out in the yard and getting the garden all fixed up. And we've got some work to do outside.
Great. Well, have a good weekend. We'll see you again next Friday.
Absolutely.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. It's 5:39 on our Friday edition of The Opening Bell. Glad to have you along. There is news about United Airlines this morning. United Airlines, it's unclear who from the airline, will take part next week in a congressional hearing on the issue of forcibly removing that passenger and overbooking. United will send someone there, not sure if it's going to be CEO Oscar Munoz or not. And the date exactly next week of this hearing is still unclear, but Reuters is reporting that the hearing will take place in Washington next week and United will be there. Let's bring in Rick Cini of faircompare.com, based in Dallas. He's the founder and CEO. Rick is with us every Friday at this time to talk about travel, aviation, and cheap fares. Rick, let's start first with the United. Has the airline done enough yet to smooth over what happened with this passenger being forcibly removed?
I think they certainly have a good start, right? So they want to prevent this specific occurrence that occurred, which is essentially having a full flight that has crew members coming on that bum people while they're on the flight. So they've at least enacted a policy for that. I think the overarching thing is a much broader discussion, which is overbooking of flights in general, overselling of flights, how compensation is done, and you know, when do you stop, you know, trying to get voluntary compensation, and how much do you actually disclose to passengers about the $1,350 potentially that they could get, for example. I think there's some more work to be done there, and I think there's going to be a lot of emphasis for airlines to do that, because as we've chatted before, Steve, every time a senator gets charged a bag fee, we have new legislation to actually remove bag fees. Mm-hmm. You can be rest assured that politicians have watched this viral craze that's gone on, and they'll be out there, you know, grabbing microphones saying they want to regulate the airlines in a certain way. So it's going to behoove the airlines to do something on their own.
Yeah, and it's already started both on a federal level and here in Illinois. Legislation proposed yesterday to ban this from a state level. So if if United or American flying into Chicago would have to adhere to this state law, I'm guessing. Let's talk about that a little. What proposals have you heard? I know I heard from a couple of Congress people to ban this overbooking practice altogether. Would that help?
Well, it would certainly help. It would probably hurt the airline's bottom line. I think there's probably some medium ground there. But I will also caution airline CEOs as well. If they all are going, "Woo, I'm glad that wasn't me," here's the big problem I see with this overall event. If we continue to see this sort of craziness that's occurred, this was the worst of the worst. But if passengers start to take, let's just say on average, they take 1.8 trips per year, and now they start taking 1.7 because of the hassle of flying, that's a billions of dollars to all airlines, not just United. So this is something they have to fix as a group. It's not just a United issue.
And you bring up a good point, because United yesterday reported earnings and passengers and all of that stuff. 57% drop in revenue coming in, as opposed to a 70% drop that was estimated. 57%, that's a big thing. What's happening not only on United, but all of these airlines?
Yeah, most of that is attributable to fuel costs and the difference in fuel costs. So year over year, fuel prices are up. And that's such a variable thing for airlines. They don't control the price of fuel. It's controlled by completely other economic factors. And so you see those fluctuations that happen pretty dramatically. In the case of passenger revenue, came in pretty close to expectations, related if you sort of try to subtract out sort of the vagaries of fuel. But generally, I would note, as far as this is concerned, I've been asked a lot of questions about this particular topic. And, you know, the question will be, and whether or not we see whether or not this actually hurt United, we won't really know probably until next earnings calendar, because just like if you have a storm that's 3 or 4 days in length, you really don't know what the economic effect is until they actually provide some of that guidance in their numbers later on. But generally, airlines are going to have to make some changes in some of these rules proactively, or they're going to have state legislators or even the federal government come in and make these changes for them. And I guarantee you, if that happens, it's not going to be sort of a happy medium. It'll be completely on the weighted side of the passengers in this case.
You know, since we talked last about this, we've learned a couple of other things too. One, I've heard a lot of United employees say, hey, this really wasn't the mainline United that was involved in this. It was a regional carrier. What's the difference there, and should that even be a difference?
There is a difference, of course. They're actually contracting out to a variety of contract regional jet providers. Those are 50, 70, and 100-seat providers. Names like SkyWest, ExpressJet, a variety of other ones. And by the way, that's almost half of all traffic is flying on those. So they're flying under the United name. They're trained with the United folks. So essentially, that's one rule for all, not just one for the regional carriers. If not, let them change their name and start up their own airline.
Yeah. So let's move on to something else. It feels like summer here in Chicago. I don't know about down there in Dallas, but it feels like that's kind of the season moving in.
It's getting there, yeah.
Yeah. So everybody's thinking of summer travel. What are we expecting?
Well, I think you're going to see a couple different things. I don't expect prices to be too much higher or lower for summertime, but you need to be shopping. For example, right now, we're sitting here at tax season. So any ticket sort of before the end of June, you need to be shopping for that right now. It's a perfect time to shop. Your cheapest days are going to be Tuesday, Wednesday, and Saturday to fly. I don't expect prices to be too much higher. Chicago, one of the cheapest cities to fly out of, that you can do that. I was looking in some late June deals, and places like the Northwest have gone up slightly for late June. They were in the low 230s to Seattle and Portland. Now they're up in the high 260s or 70s. So you need to get out there and start shopping. South Florida is still under 200, even for summertime travel. So, I don't think that to be too expensive. I think it's going to be cheaper to Europe. You still have a chance to get in some summertime or even late summertime trips to Europe. Prices are in pretty good shape. You have some luxury of some low-cost carriers to Europe as well, Aer Lingus and a couple others that you have options there. So I think prices are going to be pretty good for consumers, especially to Europe.
Yeah, and there's strong dollars. As long as that continues too, that's a bonus.
Yeah, you get if you're heading to the UK, it's almost like having a 25 to 30% bonus coupon, because of what's happened with the pound and Brexit. But generally, the strong dollar has all your activities, your lodging, your food, very inexpensive. Everything you buy there and want to bring back is you're essentially getting at least a 10 to 15% discount over previous years.
Back to the United thing just briefly in terms of lower ticket prices and competition. I heard somebody last week say, why don't we allow some of these international carriers that generally just fly internationally to start competing more domestically? Is that something that's even possible?
It's not under current rulings and laws. It isn't currently possible. We saw what happened when Virgin America tried to come in. Now that they're actually merging with Alaska Airlines, when Richard Branson tried to bring in, it took him 2 or 3 years to actually get the airline off the ground because of a bunch of vague rules around foreign ownership and sort of freedoms of where you can fly and when, sort of as flag carriers. They're starting to do this to some degree. They tested a route, for example, for international. Where they were letting sort of flag carrier like Emirates fly from, I think it was from New York to Milan, which normally they wouldn't be allowed to do. We've seen some flights. I think there was a flight out of Las Vegas into Europe on Air New Zealand. They were testing some of those out. I think they're going to continue to test some of that. Domestically, I would love to see that competition come in. I just don't think that the red tape that's going to be put in front of that is going to be years for something like that to happen.
All right, Rick, happy travels.
Tasty.
Rick Cini is the founder and CEO of FareCompare.com in Dallas. You can follow FareCompare at FareCompare on Twitter and Rick at Rick Cini. And we will have Rick on as we do every Friday this time here on The Opening Bell.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the program. 552 on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning. Dow futures are flat to negative now, off about a point. And the S&P futures and NASDAQ futures are right there in that flat area, looking for direction as we move toward the opening on Wall Street later this morning. Crude oil still at $52.65 a barrel. Gold and silver are also trading down about 0.5% this morning. A couple of other stories we're watching for you. A suburban Chicago woman has been awarded $3 million in a lawsuit against a pharmaceutical company she blamed for her husband's suicide. Wendy Dolan's husband, Stuart, stepped in front of a Chicago Transit Authority train in 2010. He had been taking paroxetine, a drug for depression and anxiety. Dolan claimed GlaxoSmithKline failed to warn her husband's doctor that the drug could increase suicidal behavior or the risk of suicidal behavior. The drug company also makes Paxil, a brand name version of this drug. Dolan's husband was taking the generic form.
Also this morning, Tesla's announced a recall of about 53,000 Model S sedans and Model X SUVs worldwide because their parking brakes could get stuck and may prevent the vehicles from moving. The recall affects vehicles built between February and October of 2016. Tesla says the less than 5% of the vehicles it's recalling may actually be affected, but it wants to inspect them all to make sure the vehicles may contain a small gear that was manufactured improperly by the supplier. German prosecutors say there is no indication that a bus bombing there, we're watching foreign terrorism this morning, was aided by others. This is a story that involves a 28-year-old man arrested on suspicion of attacking a bus team, a soccer bus team, that had taken out a five-figure loan to bet on a drop in the club's stock by purchasing financial derivatives. Spokesperson says investigators are still trying to determine how big a profit the suspect might have made. We're also watching France this morning, where the aftermath of yesterday's shooting near the Champs-Élysées is causing some problems. European markets declined this morning. It's hard to say if that was the cause or if it's the French election that is happening this weekend starting tomorrow. Here's the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Friday. It's April 21st, 2017. Most of the government's major economic reports are already out for the week, but there is one scheduled for release today. It covers state unemployment rates and job growth for individual states during March. Investors will also get some insight into the housing market today. The National Association of Realtors will report on how many existing homes were sold last month. Corporate sentencing in Detroit today for Volkswagen. Volkswagen pleaded guilty to three felony counts, including fraud, obstruction of justice, and misrepresenting the capability of vehicles with diesel engines imported to the U.S. Spring meeting of the World Bank is underway, too, in Washington, D.C., and the International Monetary Fund will join in on that with central bank governors, finance ministers, government officials, and others. And this is the National Day of Silence. Students in the U.S. marking National Day of Silence, which is designed to highlight harassment and bullying suffered by members of the LGBT community. Every year, hundreds of thousands of students across the world take part in this event. Again, National Day of Silence. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Friday, April 21st, 2017.